The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 243, entitled, How to Survive the Toughest Environments, Endure the Most Challenging Conditions, and Ultimately Come Out on Top, I chat with Zachary Babcock. Zachary Babcock is a podcast host, entrepreneur, creator of Underground Empowerment, and former prisoner who spent 5 years incarcerated before dramatically turning his life around. In today's episode, Zachary talks about spending 5 years in prison and overcoming a drug addiction and criminal past that put him in there. He covers mental toughness, resiliency, taking responsibility in your life, embracing your fears, and using your dark side to your advantage. Zachary also talks about redemption and turning his life around and the incredible success he's personally and professionally had over the past few years. If you're wondering how to survive the worst environments imaginable and come out stronger than ever, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. If you are not on the Elite Man newsletter yet, make sure you get on it right now. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter and sign yourself up today. Get all of our bonus podcast information, sneak peeks into upcoming shows, behind the scenes content, special offers, and exclusive Elite Man updates found absolutely nowhere else. You are basically getting a sneak peek into all Elite Man content, activity, and updates and news. You will be the first person notified when anything Elite Man related happens. I'm telling you, it's basically like getting a sneak peek into Elite Man headquarters. Go to elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter, sign yourself up, and become a true member of the Elite Man community. I look forward to speaking to you soon. elitemanmagazine.com/newsletter. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is my friend Zachary Babcock from underdogempowerment.com. Zachary, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Dude, thanks for having me, man. It's crazy how we got here. I was checking out your show, dude, and what really drew me in, obviously, was I could tell right out the gate, it was a topic that was really interesting to me, and I knew you were building a great community. And then I seen one of your guests you had on was Robert Greene. I was like, fuck yeah, dude. I was like, yeah, I got a jam.
Yeah, dude, I apologize for the fucking background noise. I think a train just went by as I did the intro. I don't know if you could hear it or pick it up on the audio really good, but yeah, it's gone now, pretty much gone. Anyways. Yeah, dude, Robert Greene, fucking, I had him on the show, I think two times. Robert's a great dude. He's fucking even like cooler aside from like the live recording that we did. Like, he's so cool on the air, like officially, but even offhand, we talk probably half an hour both times. And he's just a fucking awesome dude. But yeah, it's funny that you mention him of all people, because we've had some other like really interesting guests as well. But I've heard from him actually from directly from his mouth and also from other people before I interviewed him that the 48 Laws of Power is one of the most popular books when it comes to like prison, and prisoners just like love that book for whatever reason. It's one of like the most popular books. Is that true in your experience or anything that you've heard of?
Yeah. So dude, it's crazy you mentioned that. Cause, I forgot to mention that to him cause I recently interviewed him too. And, that's the reason when I seen your show, I was like, oh yeah, dude. Cause like I tell anybody that fucking has ears and that will listen to me, if I could be personally mentored by anybody in the world, it would be that dude. Like, I literally know of no one that has a deeper understanding of human nature than that guy right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, I forgot to mention this to him though. It was on my notes, but I was like, fucking, I hardly ever fanboy out, but I was fanboying. And I had a lot of shit prepared for that. But yeah, dude, it's actually banned in Missouri prisons. Like, I had the book.
Wow.
And I got in trouble for it because they did a cell search. And they didn't find the book, but I had read the book and then passed it back along and took notes on it. And believe it or not, dude, I didn't even read in prison. Didn't even know anything about self-help books or anything, but I landed on that book and I read it and I was like, holy fuck, dude, this shit is incredible. And they banned it in prison because they say it's like, you know, all manipulative and deception and all that, which it is, you know, and you can use it for that, but you can also use it to understand when that shit's being played on you and also to use it for good, to do good things with.
Yeah. And it's funny that they banned it too. In my mind too, I feel like, and I want to dive too much into the prison stuff, but I do want to ask a couple questions about that. But we've had other guys too. I don't know if you heard of the guy, Big Herc. He has a big YouTube channel now. We had him on the show a year or two ago, man. Really cool dude. Talks about, like, you know, the prison life, and we dove all into all kinds of shit regarding like prison life and circumstances and conditions of it and how to survive it. Fucking fascinating interview. Really cool dude. But I do want to ask you a couple questions about that. But it also kind of comes to mind that you mention it now, that a lot of people that have to, or that do survive prison, they make it out okay. You know, they don't fucking get killed or shanked or fucking any of the crazy shit you hear about people in prison. They make it out alive. They have to acquire some of these skills that Robert Greene talks about in the 48 Laws of Power anyways. Like, they probably already intuitively pick up on a lot of the shit just to survive. Like, you need to know some of these things intuitively, or at least learn them to be able to be good in that. Am I right?
Yeah, dude. Like, I've never been in the military or anything, but I always hear these direct comparisons, you know, because you're away from your family, you're around a bunch of, you know, you're going to war, whatnot, you're real disciplined and all that. And so I can't really speak on it because I've never been in the military, but in prison, it's psychological warfare every single day. It's all it is. It's like, you're literally, it's psychological warfare. Everybody's playing on the psychology of other people. And, you don't necessarily have to be a big, strong, tough motherfucker. You just gotta be really, really smart, not high IQ wise, but like have a good understanding of psychology or be able to develop it really quickly.
Yeah, it's basically like the street smarts thing, right? Like, you, there's book smart and there's street smart, and then there's also people that know both, or they can pick up on both. Like, maybe they're not intuitively fucking street smart or intuitively great with books, but enough studying, enough practice, enough empirical hands-on shit, you're gonna pick either one of those things up. And I think you have to pick up the street smart thing when you're in prison. What, like I said, I don't want to dive too much into it, but I'm curious, what was the reason you got sent to prison, and what were the circumstances surrounding that?
Yeah, dude. I'll unpack this story really quick, and then, you know, we can unpack more if you want, but I don't want to talk your ears off or whatever long-winded answers. I'm a podcaster. I get it. You know, I have those guests that come on and like, they're cool as fuck, but they'll talk for like 20 minutes straight and you're like, hello, there's no dialogue going on. But, yeah, dude, I grew up without a father. He died when I was 7. And so I did a bunch of shit to try and fit in with the crowd. You know, we all do to an extent. And I just went overboard with it. And I was always trying to fit in with the wrong type of people. And I did shit that was out of my character in order to fit in. And so by the time I was 17, I had caught some cases because we went out, we were being stupid one night, stealing a bunch of shit from cars. And then people left their garage door opener there. We would open up the garage door, drive off, come back. And if it was still open, like 20 or 30 minutes later, then we would raid their garage and get their power tools, whatever the fuck was in there. Just being real young, dumb, punk teenagers. And then we ended up stealing some cars. So I got those cases and I thought that, oh, fuck, I'm going to go to prison for the rest of my life. My life's over. I didn't know that you just get probation or nothing like that. And so I went off on the deep end, bro, and I started graduating to heavier drugs. I went from weed to ecstasy real quick, and then I quickly went to cocaine. Before I knew it, I was smoking crack, picking crack crumbs off the motel carpets and plunging heroin needles in my arm, wow, overdosing and shit. Yeah, it was pretty bad. And then I had gotten locked up in Ferguson Jail, and then St. Louis County came to pick me up. And I escaped from custody and assaulted a law enforcement officer that same day. Didn't get very far. And then I went away for 4 years on that. And then real quick, I went through that 4 years. A lot of shit happened during that time. We can, you know, unpack more if you want. But I got out for about 2 years, though, after doing 4 years. I came home when I was 23. And I got this job, dude, at this clothing store when I was already working at a bar and grill 50, 60 hours a week. long story short, I got promoted because I was selling like crazy. On my third day, I got a promotion. And then they seen I was a convicted felon. And they're like, dude, you got to kick rocks. You're a convicted felon. And I was like, fuck. And I just used that as an excuse to become an alcoholic. And then I ended up going back to prison. Didn't know how long at the time when I first got locked up, but I went back to prison. And that was 20 days before my twin sons were born. And that was it. That was it, Justin. As soon as that happened, I said, fuck this. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get back home and be happy and successful. Didn't know what that looked like at the time. But ever since that moment of getting locked up, I had been moving in a completely different direction.
How many years ago was that? Was that like 5 years ago?
Yep. It'll be, I don't know, depending on when this goes live, but October 2nd of 2019 will be 5 years out for me.
Fuck, dude. That's awesome. So how many years did you say you actually got locked up for altogether? I guess combined with the two sentences.
Yeah, I did over 4 years the first time, and I got out for almost 2 years, and then I went back for 8 months. So it was over 5 years total in prison, but that's not counting like all the fucking juvenile shit growing up too.
Yeah. Damn, man. So what was harder for you? Was it quitting the drugs and the alcohol, or was it simply surviving like fucking four straight years of prison mentally? What was the bigger challenge? What was the bigger struggle for you to actually overcome?
Dude, neither one of those. And it was weird, but like after you're locked up for so long, you stop thinking about the outside. You become like institutionalized and you stop, you know, you before, like when you first get locked up or right before you're about to go home, time, that's all you can think about. You're like, oh, I'm getting ready to go home and time's moving so slow. But after you've been locked up for a certain amount of time and you know you're going to be there for a while, you stop thinking about it and you start, your mind's like into where you're at. And so you're just focused on those things. As far as the drug addiction and shit, it wasn't hard for me because I was already off of it, you know, from being locked up, you know, and cleaning up. You know, you're not dope sick or anymore from heroin or whatnot. But it was still available inside of prison. But it's weird because, and Robert Greene talks about it in his book, Mastery. And I was like, he's so fucking spot on with it. He talks about, you know, a lot, and many cases, you know, people, they're only doing drugs. They're not really addicted. They're only doing drugs or getting involved in risky situations or playing dangerous sports because they don't feel alive. They feel like they're just going through the motions. They want to feel alive. And so they do these things to actually feel that because they don't feel they're numb in other places. And that was exactly what it was for me. I didn't have a chief aim in life growing up. And then when I missed out on the birth of my twin sons, bro, I had something to shoot for after that moment. And ever since then, like I don't even get like the slightest urges. I still go out and I fucking drink from time to time. I don't enjoy drinking just because I'd rather work on my fucking dreams and shit. I have more fun doing that than drinking now. But I could go out and fucking drink some fucking wine or fucking drink a couple beers if it doesn't even fucking faze me, dude. Because like Robert says, when you find that creative outlet to express yourself and something that's truly meaningful for you and something that you get to create of your own to bring to the world, like that gives you more thrill than any fucking drug or any high could.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, man. And I think, honestly, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why so many people end up in jail or end up fucking unsuccessful or unhappy or depressed. They don't have anything that really invigorates them, that makes them want to jump out of bed in the morning, that gets them excited about life. They're just kind of, like you said, and like Robert said, they're going through the motions of just letting time pass or kind of sitting on the sidelines, so to speak, of the game, which is life. They're not actually being a player in that game. They're not actually making moves and getting shit done. They're just kind of watching everybody else do shit. And they're wondering why, you know, they're standing on the sidelines and they fucking start doing stupid shit because idle time is the devil's workshop. When they have nothing to really do, they just start to create all kinds of fucking problems.
Yeah, dude, exactly. That idle time is a motherfucker, dude. And like you said, man, you like right now, I'm sitting here talking with you, and if I look over to the right, I'm in my office. I have my vision board, which is literally a visual representation of every single thing that I want in my life, and not just money, and not just the cars and clothes. Even though there's a Lamborghini up there, everybody's got the fucking their one Lamborghini, right? That they want in the cool houses and shit. But like, I got a picture of a dude coaching a football team. He's leaning down talking to two boys. And I Photoshopped my head on his head, and it's a little goofy looking picture, but it's a visual representation of me coaching my sons next year when they start football. I'm going to be the coach on their team. Like shit like that, dude. If you don't have things that are driving you and the reasons why you want them to drive you, then you're just going through the motions. You got to have something that fucking sets your ass on fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%, dude. Zach, what is the mindset when you're in prison? Like, is it a constant survival mode type of thing where you're just constantly thinking about, like, almost like an animal would, like if a caged animal, like you're fucking always just thinking about surviving or fighting or like taking care of yourself, making sure you don't get fucking stabbed or you don't piss the wrong dude off? Is it always like stress and worry, or is there a time of just kind of like stepping back and chilling from all that and just being aware of shit, like being present, but also not really being like stressed out about it?
Yeah, man, it's a good question. And so most people got the like this picture of like, oh my God, prison's like this fucking war zone. It's crazy. I wouldn't be able to survive a day in there or whatever. And it's blown way out of proportion. But it is pretty extreme. And so a good analogy I could put it to be is like, you know how everybody on social media is worried about their self-image and like everybody's posting the cool shit, but a lot of people aren't posting like the bad shit that happens to them unless they're just like a Debbie Downer, miserable motherfucker.
Yeah.
you know, like that image, you know, like, you know, like, fuck, I need to protect my reputation and there's anxiety around it or whatnot. And well, it's like that times 1,000 in prison. Cause like, that's your image and your reputation is everything in there. So if you're a stand up motherfucker, like, I mean, like, you don't have to be like a brutal, treacherous person or anything. But if you mind your own business, you stand on your own and you just stick to your own shit, you know, you'll be good, you know. But if you let people punk you, because like, yeah, when you first go in, you're going to get in some fights. They're going to test you. And if you give away your shit that they're trying to take or don't fight and stand up for yourself, then you're fucked because they're going to keep on fucking with you. But if you fight a few times, then they're going to say, okay, this guy is going to fight. I don't want to have to go to the hole every time that we fight because I don't like going to the hole, just like he doesn't like going to the hole. Let's go find somebody that doesn't like to fight back and just take their shit. Mm-hmm. You know? So yeah, it's weird. You just got to stay on your toes, but it's just like in the normal world too, you know, you got to be, you know, cautious and on the lookout for potential danger. It's just a little bit more amplified.
Yeah, it sounds like it is too. And then, you know, you're in like this fucking enclosed environment too. There's no like just getting up and going whenever you want or de-stressing or having the freedom to get up and just do something different. It's like everyone's fucking in that space, man. And I can only imagine how stressful, maybe not for you, but for other people who aren't as well or like mentally tough, how tough that can be for them when they're not able to do those things. And then, you know, they're around other people who can fucking punk them or bully them, or, you know, they're scared to fight from time to time if they have to. It can be fucking, I can only imagine how horrible it can be for some people. But again, like if you are mentally tough, I think you can survive it like you did, Zach. And
I would say you have a really good point there, but I'd also say it's what builds the mental toughness. Cause like, if you don't mind, I got a pretty crazy story, but it's like a really good lesson into it that kind of really helped me build this mental toughness, if you don't mind me sharing.
Definitely. Yeah.
So like, dude, I wasn't no badass when I came to prison. Dude, when I went away at 19 years old, dude, I was scared shit. I was like, fuck, they're going to try and rape me, dude. Like I'm going to get in fights. Like I'm this skinny little white kid, dude. Like, fuck, dude. Like I'll fight, but fuck, I'm not a badass motherfucker. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I could fight somewhat, but I'm not like a UFC fucking, I won't fucking armbar your ass, or I don't know, you know, how to do all that cool shit. But, so I was worried, dude. But then, you know, I talked to some people that I got cool with in county jail before we got there and fucking started learning, you know, like what I should be on the lookout for. But anyways, dude, after being in there for about 2 years, I was 21 at the time. I got sent to the hole, which is the prison inside of the prison. You could literally walk 3 steps one way, 3 steps the next. If you're lucky, that's it. You're in there. Oh. It's a dark, dirty, depressing cell that you get fed food 3 times a day through a chuck hole. And you got your, you know, this small space that also has your bunk and your sink and toilet in there. And so it's nothing, you know, it's nothing to be excited about at all. It's kind of a depressing little place. And I was down there for tattoo violations. I'd gotten some tattoos and got in trouble for it and got put in the hole. and I had a bunch of other tattoo other violations that stacked up. So I had to do 2 months down in the hole.
Wow.
Yeah. So I go down there, right? And then about 2 weeks in, the COs come and bang on my door and like, "Mr. Babcock, cuff up. You're going to the captain's office." And I'm immediately thinking like, man, there's some motherfucker told on me out on the yard for something that I hadn't gotten in trouble for yet, or they're trying to get me to tell on somebody else, because when you go back to the captain's office, nothing good. And so like, that was my mindset. We get back there and he's like, the captain's sitting behind his desk. He's got his arm crossed, his white shirt on, gold badge, black hat, me mug on his face, all that. And he's like, "Have a seat, Mr. Babcock." I'm like, "You know, for what, man? You know, you got me for 2 months, man. You got to put me back in my cell." And he's like, "You know, he's like, how long you been locked up?" And I was like, "About 2 years." So, "You know, when you come back here, it's nothing good, right?" I said, "Dude, I don't give a fuck, man. You got me for 2 months. I ain't saying shit. You can put me back in my cell." And he's like, "We got a call over the weekend, and your mom notified us that she had to break into the door with a screwdriver and found your sister dead on the floor with a needle on her arm."
Oh, and fuck. Wow.
Yeah, dude, like, imagine that. You know, like, I'm sitting there thinking something totally different, and I get hit with that out of left field, and I didn't know what to think. It's hard to explain, but I literally, my vision blacked out to nothing, and then it came back, and it's like this adrenaline rush burst through my body, and I started breaking down in tears. And then they gave me a 30-second phone call, legit 30 seconds, to my mom. We're on the phone with each other. We're bawling our eyes out, telling each other that we love each other, and then the phone hangs up. Wow. And then, yeah, and I'm sitting there like, well, fuck, you know, and I asked to be put in a cell by myself. I didn't want to be in there for no cell, man. I wanted some time alone. They did that for me. That was cool. And then for the next 3 days, bro, I'm stuck in this 8x10, dirty, disgusting cell, dark, cold, all this shit. And I'm not even getting out of my bed to eat. I just use the restroom. That's it. I'm sitting there crying, thinking about all this shit, all the mean things I ever said to my sister, and the goodbye that I never get to tell her. All that shit's going through my head. I'm literally going crazy. And then I wake up on that third day, bro. And I was like, dude, I don't know what the reason why I'm still here, but there's gotta be a fucking reason, 'cause I'm still breathing. But what can I do right now to find happiness and peace? And that was it right there. The key, that was one of the big keys. So at the time, dude, at that time, I didn't know anything about self-help books or self-help or personal development or none of that shit. And I didn't know what I was doing, but I asked myself that question, and it's an empowering question. Now, in 2017, fast forward, I read a book by Tony Robbins, Waking the Giant Within. We were kind of talking about that on my show. It's kind of funny. Yeah. But I read a book, though, by him, and he talks about, though, in that book, he talks about, you know, when you ask, you know, questions, your life, the quality of life determines on the quality of questions that you ask yourself. It says anytime you ask a question, your brain immediately searches for the answer anytime you hear a question. So, like, if I say, like, "Justin, what color are your shoes?" You, me, and everybody else that's listening to this podcast are searching, thinking about what color your shoes are. And that's just how our brains work. And so when we get in those situations, bro, a lot of times we'll ask the wrong fucking questions. And I'm guilty of this. I've done this plenty of times myself. But we'll say, "Well, why is this always going to happen to me?" Or, "Why does it always," you know, whatever the fuck it is. And that's not, that's disempowering. You're asking the wrong question. And instead of, you know, you're looking for shit to keep on being sad and mopey about and fucking miserable about, instead of, you know, what can I do right now to move me one step closer to my goal? What's the next best step that I could take? In my case, I asked myself in that exact situation, I said, "What can I do right now to find happiness and peace?" And, 'cause I was going through it, dude. And it's a long story. I won't go into all the specific details, but, dude, if you think OCD is fucking crazy, I don't got shit on what I did, dude. Literally every single minute of the day was calculated. Yeah, I had the toothbrush sitting at the same exact spot on my sink every day, all that shit. Like, I literally had two bathing towels, and we got to take showers 3 times a week. I took one of them and ripped them up into a bunch of mini rags, used one for the wall, one for the sink, one for the toilet. Then I'd sweep the concrete floor with my bare hands, gather up all the dust bunnies, gather some toilet paper, wad it up, get a little damp, pick up the dust bunnies, flush it down the toilet, then use the final rag to put soap on the ground and scrub my floor. Afterwards, dude, I felt amazing, though. I was dominating my space. You know, I didn't have much freedom. I couldn't break out of that cell. There wasn't no way I was going to kick that door in. So I dominated my space. I was doing my workouts every single day right before dinner came around. It released some natural endorphins, reading literature, writing letters, like, every single day. And then by the end of that 2 months, at the end of that time, I found a peace of mind, one of the most peaceful, blissful states I've ever been in my life, in a fucking prison hole, because of you know, starting with that question that led me to those answers.
This episode is brought to you by Ashford University. You can achieve your master's degree while balancing your work and home life. Start earning your master's degree today. Enroll by going to ashford.edu/eliteman. You know that a master's degree could help you get ahead in your career or start the career you've been looking for, so what's holding you back? Work, commuting, or just life in general? I know so many friends who've been trying to get their master's degree for years, but they just haven't been able to do it. Not enough time, work, the kids, too many things going on. There's so many things getting in the way from them pursuing the master's degree and actually going after the career and job that they really covet. But Ashford University's online master's degree programs allow you to learn at your own pace. You can study wherever you're the most comfortable learning. They have 6-week-long courses that allow you to take one course at a time. Being enrolled in just one class at Ashford means you are considered a full-time student. Also, the cool thing is there are no standardized tests that are required. The GRE, GMAT, and other standardized test scores are not required for you to enroll at Ashford University. And yes, they are fully accredited. Ashford University is fully accredited by the WASC Senior College and University Commission. So stop procrastinating on getting your master's degree. You can achieve your master's degree while balancing your work and home life. Start earning your master's degree today. Enroll by going to ashford.edu/eliteman. That's ashford.edu/eliteman to start your master's degree today. ashford.edu/eliteman.
Thanks, man.
There's so much there. I mean, there's so much fucking incredible just knowledge from that experience. And it sounds like it really changed you from that point forward. Like you're like, and I'm glad you brought that up too, the mental toughness thing. It wasn't just something that you had, like you were a badass when you went in. It was something that you acquired while you were there. And through the experiences, you became even mentally stronger and like able to see now, like you're on the outside for the past 5 years and you're doing fucking incredible shit. You're doing all this. And by the way, I want to dive into this too in a moment, but you're doing like so much shit and you're doing it so fast and so well because of all the shit that you've been through. Even like I mentioned the podcast thing, like it took me a few years to really get that going. You've been doing it for like just over a year and a half, and it's fucking crushing it. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to the fact that you are so mentally tough and, you know, you've gone through all this shit in your past where now you're using it to your advantage. And just that ability to tap into that, man. We also mentioned like tapping into the dark side too on your podcast, which is really cool. It's an interesting topic, but it's like tapping into like that untapped potential that you had inside you. Like it was sitting there, but you just didn't really know how to formulate it. And then asking like the right questions, seeing the right things that you have to deal with, and then actually going out and doing that shit, like living the stuff you have in your mind and you know, kind of making it more tangible. I think that's really the key to changing your life and whatever you're facing, whether it's like a business thing or whether it's a personal challenge or whether you do get sent to prison or jail. It's like, there's a fucking key there that you got to like tap into. You got to figure it out inside your own head. And once you do, things can fucking change.
Dude, I mean, you're right on the money. And same with you, dude, the shit that you're doing, dude, and being able to push through those struggles to get to where you're at. Most people give up in that phase. So that's how you know that you've built up the mental fortitude to get to where you're at right now. But dude, like to kind of piggyback off of that, dude. So like a couple things too, man, like, so now, like, all right. So obviously not everybody's went to prison. All right. I get it. But you went through some fucked up shit in your life that really broke your spirit at times. And that's what drives you. Like, so like you're talking about like with the podcast, like you break through shit because there comes a point. I always, even when I'm winning and shit, like even now, I still find a way to put my back against the wall, because if you can get your back, when your back's against that wall, you can't move back anymore. You know, the only place to go is forward. If you're looking forward and you want it bad enough, the only place to go is forward. And if you want it bad enough, there ain't nobody gonna fucking stop you at that point. So if you can get yourself in that type of mindset, like, dude, I use visualization every single day, except for I don't visualize all the happy shit. I visualize, and what if you fucking suck and this is a complete flop? And what if, you know, you ruin everything that you worked up to this moment? And what if you just, you know, rest on your laurels today and then you miss out on the biggest opportunity that would have changed everything and took you to the next level, and then you'll never get that opportunity again? Like, I ask myself those types of questions. I get myself in that kind of mind frame because that gets me fucking hungry and it gets me fired up. Even because like you mentioned, dude, like all right, dude, I hit six figures and shit this year. But it's crazy because before this year, I went through 3.5 years of when first getting out of prison and not of eating shit. But, you know, like I'm not like super, super ultra fucking successful. That's pretty nice feat to where I'm at now to where I was. But I still find a way to get into that fucking zone of, nah, man, you're the little guy on the fucking totem pole. You still got a lot to prove. You gotta do this shit for you and show these motherfuckers who you really are, you know? Cause like, I don't know, it's just when I get into that type of mind frame and that zone, that dark side, that kind of what we were talking about, that's when shit gets done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's very interesting too, that you actually like consciously tap into that dark side of the negative shit, because and then use it to your advantage, like your fuel, because a lot of people will unconsciously live in that side and they'll stay there like fucking always dwelling on the negative. And you know, the Debbie Downers, not even really to that extreme, but definitely the Debbie Downers and the negative people of the world, but just most people I think in general kind of live on the negativity side. And we talked about too, like the opposite of this, like the positive people who are always fucking in cloud nine and you know like living in this fucking fantasy world. And that's so there's a balance there, but you know, you can't be too negative because you're never going to fucking get shit done. You're never going to believe in yourself. You're never going to have the confidence to do shit. And then you can't be too positive because you're going to fucking not live in reality, not be able to face the tough shit when it comes your way. But I think consciously tapping into the negative side of things is actually fucking tremendous for you. Like, you can use that as so much fuel to empower you, to fucking motivate you, to fuel you, to get you to jump out of bed in the morning to say, I need to get shit done. Like, I haven't done enough. I'm fucking hungry. I want to do more. That shit is fucking incredible when you can consciously tap into the dark fucking aspect to you, which everybody has, by the way. Everyone has that fucking dark side of them where they just, in their mind, they think crazy shit from time to time and they think fucking negative shit. But when you can use that shit to your advantage and just kind of change it around a little bit and feed it out to like the real world, amazing things can happen.
Dude, 100%, dude. And those days that you, that the days that broke you, them dark moments in your life, that's a source of inspiration, a source of jet fuel for you, man. Just knowing that, hey, I fucking went through this shit. Am I going to let a little fucking lousy ass, my internet crashing and I couldn't, you know, get on this webinar that I was supposed to do today. Am I going to let that ruin me, dude? Fuck no. You know, like, yeah, you know, like you'll see it a lot though. You see, you know, just scrolling on Facebook, for instance, people crying about like the stupidest shit, like cause something went wrong. And I'm like, motherfucker, you don't even know what a bad day is. Like, that should just fuel you up to go even harder. It's just an opportunity for you to learn from it and to grow or just to not do that shit no more. Whatever it is, man, it just depends on, you know, obviously it's situational, but still.
Support for the Elite Man podcast comes from Manscaped, who is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Every man knows in the 21st century you have to keep things clean, trim, and proper down below. And yes, by this I do mean you have to manscape your privates. I've had so many horror stories in the past where I've nearly chopped off my precious jewels simply by using inferior, lesser-quality razors. Single blades, double blades, triple blades, electric blades. I've tried all of them in the past and they've all come up short in being safe and effective for keeping my privates looking good and me safe. But Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer and their Lawnmower 2.0 has proprietary skin-safe technology so this trimmer won't nick or snag your nuts. Manscaping accidents are finally a thing of the past. I'm telling you, their Lawnmower 2.0 is incredible. I love it and use it all the time and you are absolutely going to love it yourself. And Manscaped has also come out with the Crop Preserver, an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorant on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? This Crop Preserver is fantastic. It smells incredible, and the women in your life are going to love you even more. So make sure you get the Lawnmower 2.0 and the Crop Preserver right now. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code ELITEMAN at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the coupon code ELITEMAN.
I want to ask you too about, you said that there was a time that when you were in prison, it just kind of after like a couple of years of being there, you become institutionalized. But more importantly, you just kind of get it out of your mind of, like having the desire to fucking be out of prison. It's like at some point something kind of switches in you, or you know, over time it just kind of becomes ingrained into you that you have to stop focusing on that shit that you can't control and just kind of accept what is happening right now. How does that actually, what does that actually look like to you? Or what did it look like to you to make that mindset shift of being more present, as shitty as the circumstances were? Obviously prison is probably the worst circumstance you can have for most people. As far as that being just like a horrible environment, how do you make that shift mentally to just accept it and then realize that it will change eventually, but so that you can be okay right now?
Dude, I really am enjoying this interview, dude. Cause like, you know how many times, you know, people ask me about, you know, cause I've been on, I'm pretty sure you've been on a lot of podcasts too, been on quite a bit of different podcasts, and you know, they kind of touch the surface levels of the prison shit, but they didn't go deep like that question that you just asked me. Like I've never really been asked that. And it's really cool. Cause I'm actually having to think and go back into that point in time. But dude, to answer that though, man, I never not wanted, like, didn't have the desire to be back on out in the free world with my family and all that shit. Like, that's always there. Maybe for, I don't know, for some of the guys that have been there for like 10 and 20 years and shit, maybe they're like so far gone, whatever. But you get to the point, like, cause like, yeah, it's weird. Cause you know, like I mentioned, at the time, I didn't know nothing about personal development, nothing about, I never even heard about this shit. But dude, I would visualize day and night. And back then, you know, I went in when I was 19. So you can imagine what I was visualizing. I was visualizing the day I came home and I would see myself all tatted up and shredded and ripped up or whatever. And like, you know, getting on some girls when I came back home, because I was 19. I didn't have a girl at the time. And that's, you know, that's all we think about as men at around that time. And lo and behold, that visualization of keeping that in the forefront of my mind, what I do in prison, dude, I fucking worked out all the time. I got a bunch of tattoos and fucking did a bunch of stupid shit while I was in there too, obviously. But you know, that happened. So like my mind was like, okay, that's what I'm going to get to. I know I'm going to come home soon, but I can't sit here and count down the days right now. I got a 7-year sentence. I haven't even went and seen the parole board yet. And I got a class B felony. I know I'm at least going to do 2.5 to 3 years on this deal. And so like you, after like, it's probably a different time frame for everybody, but after a few months of being locked up though, you know, you become used to it and this becomes your new world that you live in.
And so when you become used to it, does it just kind of fade from your conscious thought where you're not like even fucking considering being out? Like, you know, in the back of your mind, you will be out again. You will see your family, your loved ones, but do you just not concentrate on that? I guess like it's not something that you're focusing on. It's not something that you're dwelling on. You're just fucking surviving on a day-to-day basis. And actually not even just surviving. It sounds like you kind of get to a point where you can actually enjoy like some little things about like being in there. Like obviously it's not fucking fun, but there are parts of it.
No, that, you're,
you
know, right.
You focus on yourself and kind of like you can at least enjoy those moments.
Yeah, no, it's weird because you actually do begin to enjoy some of the shit that you do in there. I know it sounds fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But like, dude, all right. So like everybody's different. So I like sports. I'm a diehard Rams fan. Have been since I was 11 years old. And I also like other sports too. So, and we have our own TVs and shit in there. So I'd always look forward to that. I really, really, really love psychology, and I really love playing poker because it's nothing but psychology and math.
Yeah.
And me too. I would get my ass cracked on the poker table. So here's what I did, dude. I hustled on the yard. I look forward to day to day, like you talked about, and week to week. And like, I was like keeping my mindset in there and goals in there. So like, I had a store that I'd run. A lot of times that shit didn't pan out because motherfuckers will check in and not pay you back or whatever. Check in means they check into the hole saying they need protective custody or whatever and don't pay you back. I didn't really have that shit happen to me, but I had a lot of times where guys would like get shit and end up transferring out to another camp and shit. But I would do that, run a store. There's always a profit and a hit somewhere here and there. But where my bread and butter was, I would write tickets on the yard, sports tickets. So like NFL week, they have all the games. We go and get the lines from the newspaper up in the library. And then we'd have the ticket owner would make out the lines and then he have his writers. I was a ticket writer. I would write for the ticket guy and I got 20% of everything that I wrote on the yard. So Anytime somebody booking a ticket, I was out there in the yard hustling, booking tickets that way. And then I'd take all that money I'd make off of that in the store, take it to the poker table and get my ass cracked, dude, like all the time. Cause, and I got really good at poker by doing that, by the way. I was addicted to it, man. Like, you know, it's really addicted gambling and shit. And this is a thrill of that, but I got whooped up so much in that game that I started actually getting good at it. But dude, I'm playing against people that have been locked up for so long and been doing that psychology shit for so long that it was crazy. But yeah, little shit like that. I know I kind of went off on a tangent there, but I haven't talked about that in a while. I kind of brought back some memories.
Yeah, no. So I actually related, but you know, kind of off topic. Don't people advise people who've gone to prison before, don't they advise not to do like gambling and shit like that? Cause it can get you in trouble. Is that a myth or is that just kind of something different?
No, the guards literally tell us that when you first go to Bon Terre in Missouri, and if you're on the eastern side of the state, you go to Bon Terre, which is the reception where it's like a camp where all the prisoners that are coming, you know, people coming, you know, back from the streets or just coming to prison for the first time, they go there for a couple of months until they get sorted into a regular camp. And so when you first go there, they're like, yeah, don't get involved in gambling. Don't get involved in you know, the drugs and shit, obviously. And then, you know, shit like that. But yeah, you're not supposed to, it's against the rules. You're not supposed to go and get tattoos, you know, but, you know, at the time, dude, I was 19 to 23. I wasn't trying to be like a saint or anything. I was actually I actually thought it was cool to run with the bad kids back then, you know?
Mm. Yeah, no, for sure, man. And it's interesting too that you learn like so much about psychology and fucking mental toughness and all this shit from being inside, and now you come out and like you get to fucking use it in real life. And just like I said before, or I kind of alluded to before, like people who go through shit, they almost get like a superpower. Like you have, like now, Zach, you got so much more than so many other people just walking by you in the street have right now, because they haven't gone through these experiences. They haven't had to adapt. They haven't had to learn and think differently about like success, survival, fucking achievement, over like redemption and resiliency. Like all those things you've gathered over the fucking years, man, you're now using it in your life, in your business, with the podcast. It's fucking awesome, dude. It's really incredible to see you thriving right now and all the shit that you learned. Just talking to you, you know, past couple hours now doing the shows, it's fucking cool, man. Like you got a real cool fucking story and a real cool background that you can share with people. Like I mentioned before, I wanted to ask you too, what do you think the biggest key is for your success with the podcast in the past year and a half? Cause I'm curious myself. It took me fucking a lot longer than it took you to really get that thing taken off. What have you done? What is like the biggest thing that you can attribute that to?
Yeah, man. I would say probably getting on other podcasts like we're doing now that align with yours and just going on there and fucking, you know, sharing your shit, man. And if people like you, then they end up coming and checking out your podcast in the process. That was a key thing. But like I blew it up. So like here, dude, you've already ranked your podcast up. But for anybody listening that's got a podcast or thinking about starting one, like the key for me, like I blew it up right out the gate. Was I got it ranked the third day after launching, and then after launching it, I got Billie Jean's marketing on the show the following week. And so I literally went from, you know, before the podcast, nobody wanted to fuck with me. I was just some ex-convict turned entrepreneur afterthought that nobody gave the time of day to. And then a week later, we're interviewing celebrities. I've been doing it consistently ever since. And so like what I did, dude, is I got it ranked. And how you get it ranked is there's only literally four metrics that matter on Apple. And it's written reviews, ratings, subscribers, and downloads in that order. Those are the only four metrics that matter. It's the only way you can get ranked up. It's the only thing that they pay attention to. It's the only way that they can quantify anything on Apple. And so if you focus on that, then you can get ranked up. And so when you're just starting out in this podcast, you're obviously lacking all of those four metrics. But one of the big ones is the downloads. Even though it's a less valued metric, you're going up against other podcasts that have thousands, if not millions of downloads per month. So you got to really, you know, hit it hard because Apple will favor you in the beginning as well. Well, they did. I don't know. So they just literally switched up that algorithm back in August. And so they don't have new and noteworthy in all the different categories now. They just have one new and noteworthy category for all podcasts. So I don't know how exactly that's working yet. And we haven't gotten anybody into that new and noteworthy yet, but, you'll still be able to get ranked up right out the gate, if you focus on the juice, which is the reviews, because most people don't fucking write reviews. And so you got to get really creative on how you get people to actually write reviews. And so I got ranked up on my third day, and I literally was like, holy shit, this is the way. And so I literally cleared the next 2 weeks. I wasn't even making money in my business at the time. I literally cleared the next 2 weeks on just hitting people up for reviews, and I pumped the shit out of them. And now I still do that same exact script that I use, but now it's like starting to happen organically. But by getting it ranked up right out the gate, I was able to use that as leverage to get other people on my show that I wanted, some of the bigger names and stuff, that also raised credibility and status at the same time. Was able to, you know, you really look at podcasting as a powerful tool, like we were talking about on my show. It's mainly a tool for networking, to getting aligned with the people that you want to be aligned with, some real power players and the people that you want on your side. And then also for leveraging what you have in positioning yourself into the marketplace above everybody else that's in your marketplace. Cause not everybody's got a podcast. And like when you have that and you got a top rated podcast, you're automatically position yourself above everybody else in your same little space. So it's a huge, huge, huge tool. I was in prison 5 years ago, and then large part of my success, huge, dude, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now if I wouldn't have launched my podcast. It would have took me a whole lot longer. I would have figured out a way, but fuck, dude, it just literally put me on the map.
Yeah. It's been a fucking game changer for me too, man. So I can totally relate to that, man. Like seriously, when you do it right and you fucking put the work in and then you collaborate with people, you get some big names on your show, like it can be a fucking game changer for a lot of people. It's not for everybody, but for a lot of people, especially in the space that we're in, Zach, man, it can really be big. What is the last send-off takeaway message you'd like to leave the Elite Man audience regarding mental toughness, resiliency, marketing, psychology, all the things that we touched on today, man? What is a final takeaway send-off message for the Elite Man audience, and then a place that our listeners can check out your work, your podcast, your website, what you're up to right now?
Hell yeah, dude. That's a good one. So we talked a lot about it, asking yourself the right questions and getting yourself into that underdog mentality, back against the wall, going into those dark places, dark times, knowing that, you know, you've been through worse, that you can, you know, use that to catapult yourself into bigger and better things. Those are all some great things too. One thing that really changed the game for me, dude, was knowing that no matter what, you always control every single circumstance and situation that you're in, period. And now some people might be like, oh, well, no, you can't control everything. Some things really do just happen to you. And yeah, I do get it. Okay, so a fucking tornado could come through and tear down your motherfucking house right now, and they could kill your family. And God forbid that happens, but dude, that could legit happen. And you don't have any control over it. That's an act of God, a natural disaster, whatever you want to call it. And you couldn't stop that from happening. So you could either be like, man, fuck, dude, this shit happened, and now you're going to be miserable about it. You might kill yourself, or you might go out and kill somebody else, or you just might just be a real bitter person for the rest of your life and live just a slow, painful death. Or you could decide to let that pain that you've experienced, to eternalize it and to use it to catapult yourself forward and bring some fucking good about it, and maybe even help people that are going through similar situations, or, you know, create like a charity or create an awesome business and giving back, whatever it is that, you know, you end up doing after that to do good with, regardless of whichever choice you decide, whichever route you decide to go. When you hit that fork in the road, at the end of the day, it's your motherfucking choice on how you choose to respond to it, period. Nobody in this fucking world can take that away from you. So no matter what, in every single circumstance and situation that you face in life, you always hold the power.
Yeah, I love it, man. Zach, what's a place that our listeners can check out your podcast, Underground Empowerment, the website, and what else you're working on right now?
Right on, man. Dude, yeah, definitely the podcast. It's obviously, you know, we're both really passionate about podcasts. It's a shit, dude. It's Underdog Empowerment. You can literally check it out on pretty much any podcast platform that you listen to podcasts to. But to make it really easy for you, you can just go to underdogempowerment.com, and right there on the front page, you might have to scroll down a little bit. You can click a little button that says subscribe to the podcast and choose iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, whichever one you choose. And everything else that I got going on is right there on the website on underdogempowerment.com. Hope to see you guys over there. And dude, Justin, thank you for having me on the show, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, definitely check out his podcast. It's an awesome one. Depending on the time of the release of this episode, it's going to be either just coming up or just past probably my episode on Zach's show. And that was a fucking awesome one too. We talk about all kinds of other shit, just as interesting, just as good, but it's fucking definitely worth the listen. So underdogempowerment.com is the website. Obviously podcast, Underdog Empowerment. Zach, thanks again, brother, for coming on, man. Really do appreciate you. And I know our guys are going to love this one. So take care and I will talk to you soon.
My man, thank you for having me.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I'd like you to do, and that's this. Subscribe to our podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast episodes and all of our world-class advice absolutely free. Subscribe now if you haven't already and become an Elite Man today. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an amazing review. We really do appreciate it.